Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve show. We talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money.
My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. You know what? We're talking about the ins and outs of money today. But before we do, I want to thank all those people who have been going to viewers at savingwithsteve.com and saying, Steve, we would like to hear about this. We would like to hear about that. Well, guess what? We're doing just that today.
That's why we have Bill Exeter here, the CEO of Exeter 1031 and Exeter Trust Companies.
Secondly, you want to hear about HSA accounts? Well, we have Senior Vice President and Chief Revenue Officer at HSA Bank in Milwaukee. What Kevin Robertson is going to do, he's going to provide us with tips and tricks for making the most of our money with the use of health benefits, as well as how to save the healthcare costs now and in the future. On top of that, I'm going to talk about uncertainty. Now, we're talking about health savings accounts. We have Kevin Robertson. Yes, he's the Chief Investment Officer, Senior Vice President at HSA Bank. He's going to go through the tips and tricks on how to properly use your health savings account as a good retirement tool. And he's going to give you some information that'll make a difference in your life. That's why Kevin's here. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Love to be here. It's obviously a great topic that a lot of people in need of understanding more.
Oh, understanding more is, that's just the beginning. Before I get into this, I'd really love to ask you how you got into, I know you're in the banking industry, but how did you get into the health savings accounts? How did that become your focus?
I wish I had this grandiose plan that I went to do it right out of college. I'll be honest, it was somewhat of a comedy of errors, if you will. I actually found my way into insurance and financial services after college almost by accident. I honestly just found that I had a passion for helping people, whether it be preparing for retirement or navigating through health and benefits and so on and so forth. So what started out as a totally different direction in life, most of my career for the last 25 years or so, I've really been focused on insurance and financial services, almost exclusively within the benefits and commercial insurance marketplaces. And that led to being recruited into the HSA world and consumer-directed healthcare, of which an HSA is one of the core tenants. And the consumer-directed healthcare industry, I've been exclusively focused there for about the last 15 years. And I've been involved in a number of different roles, not only inside of companies, but also in industry councils and that as well, too. So I would like to say that it was a purposeful push into HSAs, but I would say it just kind of came together that way. The only other thing I'll throw out there about myself is I happen to live just north of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, with my wife and three children. I'm a graduate of Marquette University, and I'm impassioned about these topics.
No, that's great. Everybody's got to have a superpower and you don't always find it right away. So that's awesome. So let's start with some tips and tricks that people can use to make the most of the money if they're using health benefits, okay? As well as how to save for healthcare costs now, in the future. Those are some of the big things that people need to understand. Because a lot of people, as you know, in the financial industry, they just don't know what they don't know. And basically, the information you're going to provide them is you're going to give them some information so they can ask some good questions to make some prudent decisions that impact the quality of their life.
Yeah, absolutely. And the most important thing is that people take time to understand what their needs are going to be and then plan accordingly. And I'll just give you an example of what I'm talking about. Let's talk about benefit selection, which for many of us, that happens maybe in the fourth quarter of the year where we're going to pick our plan that we're going to be for the next year. And I would say that most people probably fall into the camp of either they keep whatever they have or they select what's cheapest and not pick what is actually best aligned to their needs and the needs of their family, right? Because quite honestly, benefits are not super exciting. They're kind of a pain in the neck. most people don't think about their long-term needs. They're like, okay, what happens if I get sick or hurt? I have to go to the doctor and I'll plan accordingly. But really, the recommendation is to be holistic with their thinking. You know, this should be about their health care, not sick care. They should think, not when I get sick or hurt, but what should I do to keep myself from getting sick or hurt? And they should be thinking about utilizing their preventative services, thinking about how to think and act for the long run. How do I, you know, I might be young and healthy now, but what happens if I'm older in retirement? What am I going to actually need in that retirement? Have I actually done the math to actually look at those types of things? And then, of course, understanding the tools that are out there, whether it be for calculators that might be afforded for calculating what somebody's healthcare needs are going to be today, plan comparison tools, you know, comparing this health plan to this plan, maybe savings calculators and saying, well, okay, I need to have saved for the future. Well, how much do I need to put away and so on and so forth? There's a number of tools and resources out there. So the first thing first is take time to educate yourself and engage. It's okay to be unfamiliar with this. I think most people intrinsically know that they have to save for their retirement, for instance, and they just don't know how much to know or how much they're going to need. The core tenets there is, though, start saving, do something, don't delay, right? You know, these are some of the core tenets of all retirement savings in totality, and making sure that you're paying yourself first. Now, specific to the use of health savings account, obviously health savings accounts have become wildly popular over the last decade or so. More and more Americans are afforded the opportunity to have an HSA and utilize those HSAs. But it's important that they mind that this is a health savings account, which means that while yes, there's always going to be a spending attribute of an HSA, it's important that you use the advantages of an HSA, you know, to your most potential. Most people, let's just assume for a minute that they only have a cursory understanding of an HSA. So why don't we just take a couple of minutes to talk basics? An HSA or health savings account is simply a savings vehicle, an investment vehicle that's kind of tied to your health plan. You have to have a particular qualified health plan called a high deductible health plan. But once you do that, assuming you meet other criteria like you're not covered by Medicare and so on and so forth, you can contribute money on a tax-free basis, right? So the money that's going into the account is tax-free. While it's in the account, you can grow it and earn it and earn interest and invest it and so on and so forth. That's actually all tax-deferred. And so long as you use the money, the proceeds for qualified health care expenses, it's completely tax-free on the out. So it's triple tax advantage. The only vehicle like that in existence. It also affords a tremendous amount of flexibility because unlike other type of consumer healthcare accounts like a FSA or flexible spending arrangement, those are designed to spend that money every year. HSAs are meant to last really your lifetime. And it's something that helps you afford and stretch your healthcare dollars earlier in pre-retirement and then also utilize the HSA dollars to help spread your retirement dollars. For example, one of the most powerful attributes of an HSA in retirement is that it allows you to pay for your Medicare premiums on a tax-qualified basis. In current structure, Medicare Part A does not have any premiums, but Part B and D, for instance, do. But if you stop and think about it, most Americans could be paying for those premiums on Medicare for years, if not decades. And how cool is it to be able to have a pool of money saved in your HSA that allows you to pay for that on a tax advantage basis, right? Mm-hmm. It's the only vehicle in existence to do that. So I'll stop there. Let's turn into other questions and that. But I encourage people to understand not just what an HSA is, how to use them, and then how to apply those attributes and those savings attributes to their lives.
I just want to add two comments. Number one, knowledge is key. Most of my people on the show don't know this, but 15 years ago, I went through a bout of colon cancer and I had a PPO at the time and I had low copays, low deductible, all that kind of stuff, and went through that quite quickly. But one of the people that I was at the doctor's office says, you know, you're real lucky you had a good health plan. The gentleman over there, he's on a Medicare plan that has to pay 20% for his infusion therapies. He's paying a lot of money to go through chemotherapy, you know, and people don't realize that, or they're paying a lot more than they expect because they cheaped out, so to speak. And it cost them dearly down the road because it was really drying into is savings, because I remember talking to that gentleman. The other thing is understanding the costs for your plan when it comes to prescriptions. I mean, that's a gigantic, because you know what, you have things on some plans that are generic, other are formulary, and some are branding. So there's all different costs of all those things. So it's important to make sure of that. I also know that there's many people who have saved a lot of money over time in their HSA accounts and have invested it for when they're older to cover those expenses. You know, when you're looking at healthcare costs in the $300,000 range when you're retired, between long-term care and all that kind of stuff, somebody does a good job just consistently saving in their HSA for 30, 40, or 50 years, which they could be in a position where they don't have to worry about those, and that's one less monkey on their back. So hold on a second, Kevin. I'm so sorry. I got so excited talking to you. I need to take a break. Everybody, hey, look, we're going to be back with Kevin Robertson soon. We're talking about HSAs. I see our viewer blogs popping up here. I got excited about asking one of your questions. So look, stick with us. We'll be right back. Just got to pay some bills. We'll have more Kevin Robertson in just a moment.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. We're back here with Kevin Robertson, and we're talking about HSA accounts. He's got some great items he was talking about. Now we're going to be talking about, you know, if you have chronic health conditions, how can an HSA alleviate costs, you know, especially with the high deductible plans and things like that. So, Kevin, I'm going to pop that one back to you. I know I cut you off. Sorry about that.
But no problem. Yes, back to your question. It's a phenomenal question. And I think it's one that comes up a lot of times, because when people are looking at different health plans, they may get scared off by a plan. It looks like it has a higher out-of-pocket cost, but when you take it into totality, all of the economics of it, it actually may end up being a better option for that person's lifestyle. You know, what I was just about to say is one of the core tenets of HSAs and all consumer direct to healthcare plans is that you're going to engage to become a better healthcare consumer. And by that, that word engagement really means that you start asking questions and thinking about, you know, purchases and utilizing your healthcare differently. And a perfect example is with somebody with chronic care conditions, a lot of times a doctor will just say, well, take this or do that, right? But how often does the person actually engage back with the doctor and say, well, can I understand that? Or do you have any other options or lower cost alternatives or those types of things? Or, for instance, using shopping tools that are out there. There's many different shopping tools that are discount programs or med discounts or those types of programs. And let me give you a couple examples. This actually happened this morning.
Okay.
We have a brand new January 1st deductible, right? My wife and my family, we're on a high deductible health plan, an HSA, and she went to go pick up a prescription for one of my children that she started on last year, and because I'd already met my deductible, essentially it was no out-of-pocket. Well, then today she got the bill for $161, and she goes, whoa, wait, before I buy that, she said, is that even right? Well, we called the doctor and we said, hey, is there an alternative in that? She said, actually, there is. We processed it for the prescription and it was ended up being $34, right?
I like that better.
If I would have just gone and blindly paid the $161, or perhaps I was in a copay plan where it was just $50 and I didn't think about it, right? I missed an opportunity to save money. Same thing, my son has a nut allergy, has a pretty severe tree nut allergy. When we found out that he did that, the doctor suggested having an EpiPen. Well, I don't know if you've purchased an EpiPen lately, but it can be pretty expensive. However, I found out just through a little bit of research that if you call the manufacturer, you're actually allowed to get one free EpiPen per year, absolutely free of cost.
That's like $600, isn't it?
It was hundreds of dollars. But again, if I would have just gone and paid blindly, I would have money out. But you really have to think about those things. Use the tools that are out there. There's so much information on the internet and so many things that you can do with just a couple telephone calls that don't take that long. So that's my recommendation, and it actually applies whether or not you have a chronic condition or really just want to be a better healthcare commercial.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You have to look at it like you're shopping for food at the store. There's always lower cost alternatives. If you buy the prepackaged stuff, it's more expensive. If you buy the individuals and package it together, you're good. How do you maximize savings with HSA products?
Yes, there's a number of tricks that I would do. First of all, realize that if you do have healthcare expenses in the current year, you don't have to pay for those expenses at that time with your HSA. For instance, there's no time horizon when you have to reimburse yourself for those expenses. So if you have the means to pay for that with other dollars and save that receipt, that'll allow you to keep the money that you put into the HSA for the future and allow you to invest it. Because of course, if you spend it, there's no way to save it and invest it and let it grow. So I do that myself. I keep track of my inflows and outflows. When I get a bill, I will pay for that, you know, put it on my regular credit card or whatever it may be, pay that through some other form. I'll save that receipt. I'll save those for many years in the future. So I'll be able to pull that money out on a tax-free basis at that point to reimburse myself for expenses made potentially years or decades in the preceding years.
So what you're really saying here is that I can keep my medical expenses from year to year to year, as long as I don't write them off, and compile them up all in 1 year and then withdraw the money out of my HSA without paying any taxes because it's an offset, and go buy a car, a bike, Christmas shop, whatever the case may be.
Whatever.
Now that's
like
an aha.
Yeah. Just make sure to save your receipts, because if you were ever audited, you would want to make sure to keep those. So keep a digital copy or whatever it may be.
Yeah, because if you do a distribution from your HSA, they're going to send you a 1099 mistype form for that. I didn't actually know that you can add it from year to year. It's just your receipts.
That's a perfect example that, you know, a lot of people that they go into a particular product, and the HSA is a perfect example of that. And they're like, oh, hey, this is just like that FSA thing I had before. And I put the money in, I got to use it by December 31st or I lose it, right? No, it's not. That's really where, you know, just a couple of minutes of education like we're doing right now could radically change a person's savings trajectory for what they save for the future. The other thing I would probably say, you know, for the other core tenant is make sure that you're actually saving. You know, a lot of people, they might take the high deductible health plan because it's a lower cost plan than, let's say, a PPO. Well, if there's a premium savings, at bare minimum, put that premium savings into your HSA and save it, right? Because otherwise, if you're not saving at all, you're missing out on one of the most powerful savings tools in existence in the financial world. So you gotta pay yourself first. You gotta think and act for the long run and engage a little bit differently. And I guarantee you, if you do that, you're gonna reap some very strong financial rewards in the future.
Wow, that's one. Here's a question that my older listeners are asking about, okay? And it's, why is it vital for Americans approaching Medicare age to pay attention to the confluence of Medicare Part A, Social Security, and the health savings account?
Medicare, and I will say the transition into Medicare is a confusing time for a lot of Americans. I've been working in employee benefits insurance for 25 years, and probably not a week goes by I don't learn something new about Medicare or whatever it may be, and I'm an expert in it. I think because it can be a confusing process, confusing rules, it gets typically sandwiched into a shorter period of time, and people are also afraid of making lasting ramifications based on their decisions of which plan and type and those types of things. The very first thing I'd recommend anybody aging into Medicare is, first of all, take a deep breath. There's plenty of help, and you know, there's plenty of counsel out there to help you make mistakes, and there's nothing that you're going to do that you can't recover from. But beyond that, there are some specific pitfalls, especially if you're aging into Medicare with an HSA. What you have to look at most, first and foremost, is when is your Medicare coverage actually going to start? Meaning, when can you actually have claims paid on your behalf? typically for most people, the typical enrollment is they go in the month they turn age 65 in a traditional environment, which means the first of that month they're covered by Medicare, at which point they would have to stop contributing to an HSA. However, with more and more Americans working that are seniors past age 65 and potentially electing not to actually start Medicare at a traditional time, they just need to be careful of a couple of components around that same concept of when do I have to stop contributing. Two things there. Number one, if you are going to take Social Security retirement benefits, remember that Part A enrollment is part and parcel to that. It's automatic. So once you start taking Social Security retirement benefits, it will automatically enroll you in Medicare A, whether you like it or not, right? There are some efforts in the regulatory and legislative environment to change that practice, which has been in place since 1982, but that's a topic for a different day. The other thing is, if you do actually decline your coverage and you're going to add and go on Medicare at some point later, be careful because there's something called the retroactive coverage rule, which may actually backdate coverage for Medicare for 6 months. That's okay. It's not a problem. If you have made a contribution and then you find out, oh, I wasn't really eligible for that, you just have to call your administrator, your health savings account administrator, rectify that with an excess contribution rule. It's no big deal. Do it before you file your taxes and it's not an issue.
Okay.
So again, a couple of nuances to be watchful for when you're aging into Medicare with an HSA.
What's the best way for somebody to get a hold of your firm if they need help with their HSA or any other type of spending account?
Sure. Our website is simply hsabank.com, health savings account, the initials hsabank.com. And I encourage, whether or not you're a client, if you'd like to learn more, we have an entire resource center about education. There are some of the calculators that I was talking about that whether I'm trying to compare tools, whether we have one that's called the Health and Wealth Index tool, which is trying to judge how engaged you are with your health and well-being and make suggestions for you to actually improve your health and well-being. There's different components like that. They're free to utilize for anyone, whether or not you're a customer or not. And they're accessible, again, through that hsabank.com website. That's probably the very best way to get some resources.
Perfect. Hey, Kevin, I want to thank you for being part of the Saving with Steve show. This is something our viewers were definitely looking forward to. And it's great to have an expert that's been doing this for over 15 years, even though you just dropped into it. I encourage everybody to go to the hsabank.com website, because the more information you have about HSAs and other savings accounts can make a significant difference in their future, because it's about understanding the questions that you need to ask and get the information so you can make good decisions moving forward, which will impact the quality of your life. So Kevin, again, I want to thank you for being with us today. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll look forward to possibly having you back in the future.
Great. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, and stay safe to all your listeners.
Stick with us. We got a whole bunch more to come. We're going to talk about uncertainty. We're going to talk about maximizing Social Security. So stick with us. We're going to be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I'm going to talk about uncertainty. Do me a favor, write down what uncertainty means to you, what it makes you feel. But let's talk about that word. What does uncertainty create? It creates angst. When people fear the unknown, you get things that are happening today. Let's think about it, folks. Do you know the U.S. companies are putting up some of the best earnings in 3 years, all on the backs of robust growth? We understand the concerns about tariffs, interest rates, lofty valuations, inflation is keeping the S&P in neutral. Think about that, guys. This is what uncertainty creates. Our companies are producing at a level that hasn't been seen in 3 years, and yet the S&P is stuck in the muck. Uncertainty leads to volatility. This year is going to come down to the administration's economic agenda versus the 10-year Treasury. How many of you ever thought about that? See, everybody talks about reducing interest rates. That's just short term. See, the Fed only controls short-term interest rates. But nothing really moves on short term. It moves on the 10-year Treasury. The 10-year Treasury is telling us that there's issues ahead. Its biggest warning signal to everyone, to everything. We now have a 10-year Treasury that is moving up to almost 4.6%. And I'm telling you here, it's going to get to 5 before the end of the year. When it gets to 5, on the way to 5, it's going to create havoc and put extreme pressures on equities. Folks, we saw this in 2022. If you take a look at it, as we got closer to 5 and into 5, this is one of the reasons why you lost money in 2022. And if you're listening to me by some sort of mistake because you're in your 30s, 40s, or 50s, this might not be that important to you. But if you're sitting out there listening to me and you're retired, you're entering the distribution phase of life or being forced to distribute or getting ready to distribute, then this matters. Why? Because volatility is the enemy of your lifestyle because of its effect on income. Folks, you got to understand volatility puts us in a position of making bad decisions. With volatility, we lose control. See, the point is, how do we engineer a portfolio to meet your needs? As the money is coming out of the purpose side of your portfolio, due to volatility caused by things you can't control, so does your income. Your portfolio balance is not only dropping by what you're taking out, but also from the volatility of the things we can't control and the things we just highlighted. You know what, folks? We would love to walk you through what most of our successful clients have done over the last 5 years, the COVID years, even 2022, to maintain control, grow in the distribution phase of life, and most likely, and in some cases, outperform you at the same time taking less risk. Remember, it's important to control the things we can, prepare for the things we cannot, and this is what we are here for you to accomplish when you're ready. Stick with us. We got a whole bunch more to come, so stick with us. We're going to be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the show. This is Steve Sexton with the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. With that, I want to introduce everybody to Bill Exeter. Bill, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
Oh, you know what? I'm actually really excited to have you here because you are so accomplished and you educate people all the time. But I just want to share a couple tidbits, not the whole resume, if that's okay. Bill is a professional speaker, author, and a continuing education instructor when it comes to either tax code, guys. So bear with me. I don't want to bore everybody right at the start. But 1031 exchanges, 1033 exchanges, People have had tenants in common, commonly known as a TIC, or you've possibly heard or not heard about Delaware Statutory Trust. Bill is so experienced in the 1031 exchange world, his firm has done over 125,000 of them. On top of that, he's a trusted fiduciary. He does expert witness testimony. He works with a lobbyist for this organization. So we've just got a world of information here. And quite frankly, we're going to try and squeeze every ounce of it out of him. Again, I want to thank you for joining our show. And you know what? Just to start it off, for those who don't know, can you provide a basic overview of 1031 exchange, kind of what it is?
Sure. And probably a perfect way to do that is to use an example. So let's assume somebody bought a single family house and it became a rental property and you know it's gone up in value. And 3, 4, 5 years later, they decide, I really like this rental property business. I'm ready to do a duplex or a fourplex or an aplex or what have you. They're going to sell their single family and they meet with their accountant. And that's when they get the OMG on taxes and how much they're going to have to pay. And that's where the accountant says you should look at a 1031 exchange. And that allows them to sell that single family, defer the payment of all their taxes, all their capital gain, depreciation, recapture, and Medicare surcharge by reinvesting in other replacement property. And so most investors will sell one and buy up, whether that means buy a multifamily and get a duplex or fourplex, or whether that means buy 2 or 3 or 4 single families. You know, they're really diversifying their risk, diversifying their cash flow, et cetera. And it's really all about building net worth.
Mm-hmm. You know what? It was really interesting. You said they get to defer their capital gains, their deferred recapture, as well as the net investment tax or the Obamacare tax is what it's called. And what people don't quite realize is that's about 38% of your profit. And that's a big, oh my God, like you said. It's really interesting. I was like, oh yeah, I think people need to know that. So why would people look to do the 1031? We talked about the tax benefits. What other benefits are there?
Sure. Well, a lot of people are either in a consolidation strategy. So if they're getting closer in retirement, they go, you know, let's get rid of some of these labor intensive properties and get into something that's easier to manage. So they may sell 3 or 4 and buy one or buy something that's easier to manage or go into something that you mentioned, the Delaware Statutory Trust, things like that. Others, especially when they're younger, you're building your wealth. You may sell one and buy 2 or 3 and you're diversifying your portfolio. Others, when you're getting ready to go into or coming out of a recession, you might reposition to take advantage of the next wave. And so they use the 1031 to do all of that without having to pay the taxes. So it's really a great way to reposition depending on what your goals and objectives are. And then you mentioned, you know, it's tax deferred. A lot of people call it tax free, but it's really tax deferred. You're kicking the can down the road. But if you keep exchanging throughout your lifetime, and then when you pass on and you leave the property to your heirs, your kids, grandkids, whomever, they get a step up in cost basis. So the capital gain goes away, the depreciation recapture goes away, and they avoid the Medicare surcharge, the Obamacare tax. So we have a morbid sense of humor. We call it swap until you drop. So keep exchanging, kick the can down the road forever. And then when you pass on, your kids don't have to pay anything.
So here's a couple of questions. California, when it comes to landlords, they're not very kind to landlords. The regulations are more for beneficial for the tenants, especially when you see things right now where people can't evict people. They're not allowing them to go through the courts. So many people look to sell. Can they 1031 exchange into another state?
Absolutely. All 50 states would qualify, including some of the territories. So they could go into Guam, Marianas Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands. Interestingly, the only one they can't exchange into is Puerto Rico, but all the rest would qualify. So it gives you a great way to avoid or get out of a state that has very unfavorable business climate. And we're certainly seeing a lot of clients leave California.
Okay, so I know you've worked with some international clients just from our past conversations. So, for example, we have an affiliate called UK Health Radio in London, England. If somebody were to look to do some sort of exchange from the United States to the UK or vice versa, is that possible?
It's good question. If they are selling a U.S. property, they can't 1031 exchange into a foreign asset. It has to be either U.S. for U.S. or it can be foreign to foreign. And a lot of stuff you read on the internet out there will tell you you can't do a foreign property exchange. What they mean is you can't sell U.S. and buy foreign or sell foreign and buy U.S., but you can sell foreign rental property and exchange into other foreign rental property. It won't defer any of the foreign country taxes, of course. you pay and whatever you would pay in those countries, but it will defer the U.S. tax consequence. So you really have to figure out what your U.S. tax consequence is and see if it's worth doing it.
Okay, that's good to know. So let's talk about what an investor can exchange with a 1031.
Well, I should probably back up. So there's really two issues that we talk about a lot. One is qualified use, and that means all the properties they sell, all the properties they buy have to be held for rental, investment, or business use. And then the second is like-kind property. And that's where there's a lot of misinformation out there.
There's curriculum
that still says condo for condo, and that is absolutely false. Like-kind literally means you're selling real estate, and you have to buy something that is also real estate. So it's fairly straightforward. But there's assets that you wouldn't normally think would qualify as like-kind, such as the Delaware Statutory Trust you mentioned, fractional ownership through like a tenant in common structure, oil and gas interest, mineral rights, air rights, water rights, things like that would also be considered real property in most of the states.
Okay, so I got to ask this question. I knew a gentleman that what he does is he rents and leases out his plane. Okay. He's in a position where he's done with the plane. And he said, you know, I got this depreciation. It's still worth some money. It's not worth as much before, but the 197 depreciation is very significant. Can he 1031 that plane into another plane?
I'm glad you brought that up because you used to be able to, but the Tax Reform Act of 2017 eliminated personal property. So now the only type of asset you can exchange is real estate. Personal property like aircraft. We used to do a lot of aircraft exchanges, but that's gone. Always is an issue. You still have some of the same issues with real estate if someone's done a cost segregation analysis or taken 179, bonus depreciation, accelerated depreciation, things like that. That's still something the financial advisor and or accountant would have to walk them through to see what that might be and, you know, just see what the tax consequences might be there.
Okay, so, and I've got to ask this because this is a viewer question. Again, if you're watching us, you can go to viewers@savingwithsteve.us and ask a question and we'll get it answered. We kind of sneaked out that you were coming on the show. So one person asked this question.
Sure.
He rents out his boat for charter and it's a business and he's looking at doing a 1031 exchange because obviously the boat's not worth as much. But again, he's got that massive amount of depreciation. Can he go from one boat to the next inside that business for using a 1031 exchange?
So unfortunately, they used to be able to, but it's the same issue. The Tax Reform Act eliminated that. So that unfortunately eliminates boats and anything that's not considered real property.
Okay. All right. And for example, you have a quarry, they're selling the quarry. They want to use the proceeds from that quarry to maybe buy rental properties. Do they have the ability to do something like that?
Absolutely. So the quarry, of course, is probably all going to be considered real property unless there's a personal property located on the quarry, you know, equipment, trucking, whatever. But most of it's going to be considered real estate. So that would certainly qualify as like-kind to other real estate.
Okay.
And it's a great way to get out of something that maybe is not producing as much income as you'd like it to and into something that would produce more income.
So, and you know what? I just want to point this out. There's a couple farmers out there that have kids that no longer want to operate the farm after, you know, family having the farm for 50 or 60 years. And you know what? They can actually sell that farm, 1031 exchange into a Home Depot, Lowe's, or something like that through a Delaware statutory trust, or become part of an LLC that holds real estate, or a tenant in common if they want.
Absolutely. That's a really good example. We have a lot of clients that are farmers, and that's exactly what we see. The kids don't want to carry on the tradition. And you see a lot of the independents selling to the corporate farms and what have you. And selling farm or ranch land or timberland, all of that is considered rental, investment, or business use property. So it qualifies under the qualified use, and it's real estate. So it certainly qualifies for like-kind property.
Okay. I know we have election stuff and all that stuff to restrict or limit the use of 1031 exchanges. You know, can you tell everybody what that really means?
Sure. And, you know, the first thing is this is not a political issue in terms of Democrats and Republicans versus each other, what have you. I've been doing this for 36 years, every 3, 4, 5 years. Almost every administration has proposed some kind of change. Almost every Congress has proposed some kind of change. So it's more about educating Congress as to what the benefits are and why this should not go away. What proposed, and this was proposed back in March March pre-COVID-19. So we don't know if any of this would change. But what proposed was if your adjusted gross income is $400,000 or more, and actually he didn't call it AGI. He just said if you make more than $400,000, you won't qualify for 1031 exchange treatment. And if you make less than $400,000, you will qualify for 1031 exchange treatment. It's effectively what it boils down to. Now, what people don't realize is normally when they define how much you make, it's adjusted gross income. And part of adjusted gross income is your capital gain. So if you sell real estate, in a lot of cases, the sale of real estate could push you right over the $400,000 adjusted gross income just for that year, and you may not qualify for 1031 exchange treatment. So when he's trying to tell people, I'm just going to restrict it for the wealthy, actually, most of the exchange clients are not wealthy. They're just you and I, Joe Blow. They've got two or three or four rental properties, and it actually could hurt the average investor. So we obviously take it seriously, and we have, I think it's either 16, maybe even 18 industry trade groups now that have formed a coalition specifically to educate Congress on the benefits of 1031, how they actually work, and what the devastating effect would be, not just to real estate, but the entire economy if 1031s were to go away.
That's great, Bill. I'm going to hold you right there. I just want to tell everybody this. Hey, look, if you go to Exeter, EXETERCO.com, you can get Bill's 1031 exchange guide. It's a great piece of education and information, so you can get more educated on 1031s. Hey, we're going to pay some bills. Stick with us. We'll be right back with more of Bill Exeter.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, I want to welcome you back to the Saving with Steve Show. Again, we talk about everything under the sun that enables you to have a healthier, happier relationship with money. Now, I truly want to thank everybody who's tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at www.savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network, and all these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and help you live a life of financial and personal freedom. Also, you can follow us up at Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook. You can get subscribed there. Please follow us, subscribe on. We'll make sure you get all the great content, gift information, things like Bill's books. And Bill Exeter, I want to thank you and welcome you back to the show. Again, Bill's been helping us out with 1031 exchanges. You know what? The second half of Bill's segment here, we want to talk about self-directed IRA questions, okay? A lot of people don't understand what a self-directed IRA is. So, Bill, again, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Okay, let's start out. What does the term self-directed IRA really mean?
You know, that's a great question because a lot of folks don't really realize it. But from my perspective, all IRAs are self-directed. The clients choose where to put the IRA, and they may choose to put the IRA at a commercial bank, and they invest in certificates of deposit or money market funds, or they choose to put it with a securities brokerage firm, and they buy stocks or bonds or mutual funds, or they could choose to put the funds with the trust company. Mm-hmm. And it really boils down to what does the IRA custodian allow them to invest in? And that's what differentiates all these. So the industry's kind of used or coined the term self-directed IRA to mean those IRA custodians that allow what we call alternative investments or non-traditional or non-standard investments other than the publicly traded assets.
Okay, so I'm going to boil it down a little more simple. Whether you're with Schwab, Fidelity, Exeter Trust Company, or any other what's called a broker-dealer or custodian, in each custodian says, hey, we have a list of investments that you can pick and choose from. And if they don't allow Delaware statutory trusts, they don't. If they don't allow stocks, they don't. If they don't allow mutual funds, they don't. Some of them allow them all. Some of them allow very little. So when people look at a self-directed IRA, you even if you have a 401k, you self-direct it because you pick and choose the investments. It just depends on which ones are available. Quite frankly, according to regulation, most 401ks are only required to have three different investments, a money market, a bond fund, and a growth fund. That's it. So you know what? When you're looking at self-directed IRAs, you know what? You want to look around, especially if you're going to make an investment into something that might be non-traditional, to one that's going to give you the best terms, so on. Am I right in that, Bill?
Absolutely, right on the money.
Okay, great. So now, what investors really need to know about a self-directed IRAs? Maybe I just spilled the beans on that. I don't know.
No, that was a good summary, though. They get kind of confused as to what should I do first. So I think the investor first needs to sit down with their financial advisor and really decide, you know, what do you want to invest in? What are you interested in? What do you have a passion for? So a lot of people through their IRAs or 401ks do stocks and bonds and mutual funds, and that's what they're comfortable with. A lot of our clients, because we're very real estate centric, are focused on real estate. And they've made a lot of money in real estate and they don't like stocks, bonds, and mutual funds because they don't understand that. So they really have to sit down and ask that question. What are you comfortable with? What do you want to invest in? Do you want a diversified portfolio? A lot of our clients are real estate guys and gals and they will not do anything but real estate. But, so they have to decide what they want to invest in. And then once they get to that point, then you can choose the IRA custodian that's right for what you want to do. There's IRA custodians that are really good with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds like Schwab and Fidelity, et cetera, and TD Ameritrade. And they can execute those trades and it's cheap and what have you. In our case at Exeter Trust Company, our specialty is real estate. So folks who want to roll the IRA over to us and buy real estate or invest in mortgages or deeds of trust or tax lien certificates and things like that would choose somebody like us to invest in that. And so it really, you know, choose what you want to invest in first and then go and look for the right IRA custodian who's got the expertise that they need as an investor.
Okay. So, you know, we got about a minute and a half left, but I want to talk about Exeter 1031 compared to other traditional qualified intermediaries. Why is there a difference between what you do and what they do? I know it because I've seen you and I've seen you save people before. So please help us understand that.
Sure. You know, most qualified intermediaries, in fact, 99% plus, are not licensed, regulated, or audited by anybody. There's no government oversight. I think our biggest strength is we took a couple of years and went through the regulatory review process. So we now have a trust charter. All of the funds are held by Exeter Trust Company, which means we are one of the few qualified intermediaries that has direct government oversight. And most of the exchange companies that have failed over the years could have been prevented had there been government oversight. So I think that's the most critical difference between us and a lot of the others. And then we're much more advisory and consultative. So we'll jump on a phone call with the client and their advisors and walk through issues and, you know, tell them what we've seen other clients and other advisors do and things like that, where most qualified intermediaries are just processors.
Okay. That's wonderful to know, because over the years that I've known you, I've talked to some of the people that you have actually saved because somebody that wasn't qualified tried to do the intermediary stuff and it just quite frankly, didn't work out because they didn't know all the ins and outs like you guys do. And I also heard from an attorney who also used you as a professional witness, and they were very happy they did because it made a difference in winning the case because the other unqualified intermediary didn't know what they were doing. So I want to thank you for joining us today. How can people get to you? What's your website? Please share that with us.
Sure. You can email me directly if you'd like at wexeter@exeterco.com, or you can also use our general email, which is ask@exeterco.com. So it's ask@exeterco.com. You can call me at 619-239-3091. That's 619-239-3091. Or go to our website, exeterco.com, and all of our contact information is out there.
I would recommend everybody, if you're interested in in this, go to exeterco.com just so you can get the education, because there's a lot of education there just by downloading the 1031 guide, by looking at the ins and outs of things. I love the education piece because it makes all the difference. It just means you're not selling, you're just educating, which is great. So, Bill, I want to thank you for joining us today. We'll look forward to seeing you in the future. And again, have a great 2021.
Happy New Year to you too.
Thanks. We'll see
you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Again, that was Bill Exeter talking about 1031 exchanges and self-directed IRAs. It's very important if you're looking at investing in anything that you go about talking with a financial advisor and learn all the ins and outs. I hope you got some good information out of this and enables you to live a life of personal and financial freedom. Now, I want to thank you all for joining us today. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. And with that, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. I want to thank our networks, UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, 247 Radio. With that, we're going to be signing off. This is Steve Sexton with the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.